This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. We're weeks away from the November 6th election, and Newsmakers is bringing you a series of political debates between candidates in this year's races. This week, we're featuring Wisconsin's 96th Assembly District. The seat was held for years by Republican Representative Lee Neerison. Now, two Viroqua area farmers are running for the chance to represent all or parts of Crawford, Vernon, and Monroe counties. Joining us now in studio are Democratic candidate Paul Berg and Republican candidate Lauren Oldenburg. Paul, we'll start with you. Could you explain who you are and why you're running to represent the 96th District?
Yes, Hope. Thanks for having me. Thanks to WPR for holding this forum. I'm running for the 96th Assembly seat because I feel I've been very lucky. I began life in very modest settings. I attended a one-room schoolhouse with 8 grades and 16 kids. From there, I went on to attend Cashin area schools, public schools, and I was taught by caring teachers, got a good education, and had the privilege to attend college. And with the luck of a few grants and scholarships, I graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Platteville with a high honors and a degree in animal science. After I graduated, there were opportunities in rural Wisconsin, and my wife and I, who were married 43 years on October 11th, decided to make our home here. We bought a dairy farm near Viroqua. So along with milk sales, we developed a market for genetics, which we sold worldwide. We felt being a dairy farmer epitomized the American dream. The harder and smarter you worked, the more you succeeded. So we raised 3 children, and they all benefited from good schools, safe roads, and good health care. But the problem is, after they graduated, they all moved out of the 96th district. The same opportunities that Darlene and I had were no longer there, or they were limited. I want to see new opportunities in our district that attract young people so our communities grow and our businesses thrive. That's why I'm here running for the Wisconsin Assembly. I feel it's our responsibility to give back what we've been given, to create an opportunity-rich environment that provides young people the chance to be a part of this system, giving them a stake in this beautiful country, and to ensure that the area thrives and is part of the future of this great state.
Lauren, can you explain who you are and why you're running to represent the 96th District?
My name is Lauren Oldenburg, and I live, about 20-some miles south of here. And the reason why I'm running for the 96th District is because I'm a lifelong farmer, and I want to represent the farm, the business, and the people in the 96th District. As a fourth-generation dairy farmer, grew up on the same land as my great-grandfather. It's been in the family for 140 years, so I have deep, deep roots in the 96th District. And it's an honor to have the opportunity to serve the people in 96th District, because we got a lot of issues out here. Road issues, got to fix them. We got to bring more business, more tourism in this area, and more possible jobs, good-paying jobs, more revenue, so that 96th District can thrive and move forward and be a very vital and prosperous place for people to live, work, and retire. So that's kind of the reason why I'm running for the 96th District.
All right. You both are farmers. Agriculture has been in the national news a lot in the last year, from retaliatory tariffs impacting milk prices to the new trade agreement between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. Lauren, what do farmers need from state government in the current economy?
An opportunity to farm without excessive regulations, excessive restrictions. So they have an opportunity, like all businesses, to grow, expand, go into alternative cropping, alternative ways of, doing things like value-added organic, value-added non-GMO, value-added crops. So they have an opportunity to, market their own product. And so the state has got to be out there to helping, to have a stable marketplace for the people and for the farmers, where they can help out in grants or policies so they can actually have a place to market their milk, crops. But the biggest thing is finding a good marketplace for these farmers to sell their products and keep them around. We're losing processors for the milk end of it because everyone hurts when prices are low. It's not just the farmer, but it also is the where you sell your product and your goods. So it's a very important issue. It's a very trying times right now for the farmers. So we definitely have to be a partner with all farmers and all agribusiness that we, you know, can keep moving the ag business going forward because it's an $88 billion economical impact for the state of Wisconsin. So,
Paul, what do farmers need from state government in the current economy?
Well, obviously this is a challenging time. The tariffs have not helped us in any way. We are the first victim in a trade war as farmers. I feel it was an unnecessary wound that was inflicted upon us. We have a new agreement now with Canada and Mexico, but as I read it, very little has changed. It's more or less a cosmetic stance that has been taken to look like we maybe had a victory. But as far as the state, most of these agriculture issues are national. The milk flows between borders. Right now we have excess milk coming from Michigan at very low rates that undercut our product in for our processors buy at a reduced rate. And so they aren't really looking for any new processors. So as dairymen, we can't move our product around like we could in the past. As for what the state can do, I think the Wisconsin IDEA, which is what you represent, is very important. There's new things out there. I just went to a seminar at the Taner Creek watershed, and they are proposing new ways of farming with cover crops and that will reduce inputs and also reduce runoff. These are exciting things that can be incorporated that can make us more profitable than traditional methods. And also the Wisconsin IDEA can promote new crops and new methods and also the new methods of farming that will make small farms more profitable in the future. I think that's the role of the state in our economy.
Many residents of rural areas in Wisconsin have expressed a disconnect between lawmakers in Madison and local needs. Paul, as a largely rural district, what do your potential constituents need from an elected official?
Well, they need a spokesman. And right now, the disconnect, I think, is because we see, as we travel the state, we see such a difference in the economy of our rural area as to the eastern part of the state. It's like a different country when you drive there. The roads are repaired as opposed to here. The schools are better funded because of the funding formula. It's a remarkable difference. I think that the rural areas have been neglected in the current state agenda, and I think it's in the duty of the next representative for this district to form some sort of rural alliance and work across party lines to get more attention paid to the rural areas and make sure that we're part of the future in Wisconsin.
Lauren, as a largely rural district, what do your potential constituents need from an elected official?
Number one, they got to be present out there. You know, they got to be able to, you know, be heard and seen. You know, when called upon, you got to be there, you know, and that's number one. Also, we got to bring a loud voice from the 96th district down to Madison because we are one of 99 representatives and we represents 2.5 counties. So that's, you know, we have a big task ahead of ourselves to be heard and being seen so we get our due share of revenue back here and tourism dollars. And also, we got to promote the 96th district, you know, as a tourist area. because it's a beautiful area, this Cooley region. And we got to promote that through advertising, any state help us find out policies or financials that we can actually bring in to have people come to the 96th district and see what a beautiful area we have. And the people's voice has got to be heard down in Madison. And that's my would be my job to be to do when I get elected in, down to Madison is to have the voice of the people, because we have to be heard, because we are all here and we are very important to the people.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're featuring a debate between the candidates for Wisconsin's 96th Assembly seat, Republican Lauren Oldenburg and Democrat Paul Burr, both of the Viroqua area. Lauren, many communities in your district were impacted by severe flooding at the end of August. Is there enough assistance available for residents to recover?
Well, that's going to be still determined because of FEMA. I don't believe they have said they are actually going to help out yet. I know it's in the process of doing it. I know the governor has put some money into some agencies or whatever that, hey, they can do some grants and low-interest loans and stuff like that. But I don't, and we've had great fundraising events around the state, which around the area, that people have stepped up, which has been very encouraging, and very encouraging that people are stepping up and helping and stuff. So, but it's still in the process. If there's going to be funding, we definitely hope FEMA comes in and helps these people out. But at the state level, I think we're going to have to do it as a budget coming up this coming year for, so this does not happen or keep happening. We're going to have to come up with a plan some way and somehow to minimize the impact of these flooding in these districts and these small communities, because it's going to be costly, but people are getting tired of dealing with flooding issues after 7-8 of them for the last 11 years. So it's definitely going to be an issue that's going to be coming up in the next year that we're going to have to try to settle and come up with an answer.
Paul, is there enough assistance available for residents to recover from recent flooding events?
Well, so far there hasn't been. This hasn't been declared a disaster area yet, but FEMA has been by, and that hasn't been. They haven't been forthcoming on what's going to happen. The residents are many residents are without homes now. There's been over 500. Homes, I think, in the area that have been declared not livable or damaged severely. And this is a big problem for these small communities. There's a dozen communities in this that have been flooded in the district. It's certainly heart-wrenching when you go there and see the mess that they're dealing with, both in their homes and in the parks that surround their communities. I think one of the things that this brings up is how do we go forward? We need some science, fact-based answers. We need a government that relies on science and doesn't fire scientists out of the DNR. We need to somehow come to grips that this may be caused by global warming, climate change, and we need facts to deal with this if we're going to move forward in an intelligent way. We can't make decisions based on past, because the past weather doesn't seem to apply anymore. So I think that's the first thing. We need to acknowledge that there is something going on here, and then as a state, we have to prescribe the solutions that will keep these communities out of harm's way in the future.
Counties and communities across the region continue to struggle to pay for aging roads. What should the state do to help local officials keep up with transportation funding needs? And we'll have Paul begin.
Well, 58% of the roads in Vernon County and Crawford County are rated poor or worse. It's almost that bad in Monroe County. This is the result of an irresponsible policy that allows our roads to depreciate without a proper plan in place, a responsible plan in place to maintain them into the future. I think the first thing that needs to be done is a plan has to be put in place that responsibly keeps our roads safe. These are the roads we all use. We use them whether we're going to school, taking our kids to school safely, whether we're going to work, whether we're going to church on Sunday. These roads are used by everyone, and they're a part of our economy, whether we're sending our goods to market. So a plan has to be put in place that not only puts it on a schedule to bring them up to par, because we need these roads in the future if we're going to have an economy and we're going to have tourists visit us, but we also need a responsible way of paying for it. Right now, we borrowed $400 million last year to pay for fixing roads. That increased our debt, so our service to the debt is now at 22% of the money we take in on gas tax. We have to find a way that is responsible and sustainable to maintain our roads into the future, including a way of paying for them that doesn't involve borrowing.
Lauren, what should the state do to help local officials keep up with transportation funding needs?
Local officials, it is a tough job to do because as a town board and town chairman in the past, you go along on these roads and, you know, you don't have enough money in the budget. You wonder, okay, should I fix this road or put it on hold for the next year? You know, so those are the tough issues that the local officials has to do at the county level and the township level. So I know the governor has put forward they want to pay for 30% or raise that amount of money going back to the state to the local county and to fund those roads. And definitely we have to look at that so these county boards, these town boards can actually make good decisions and make good decisions on how to fix these roads and get them up to, I don't know, say passable or at least drivable conditions. And that's what we got to do because tourism, you know, I think of all the Corvette drives I see by my place and stuff, they take, you know, they're out there on these roads and that brings money into the economy. So we definitely at the local level, we have to fund these roads a lot better at the county level and also at the township level. And that bringing more money per mile back to these municipalities so that they can actually do it. And at the state level, it's a very big concern, and it has to become a plan. We got to have a plan in place and look at that plan every year so and adjust to it because these roads will have to get fixed because it's hard on our vehicles. It hurts our economy. And in the 96th District, tourism has a very important role in that, and it will become even a greater role in that to bring people to the Cooley region. Definitely, we got to fix these roads.
Road funding has been an issue for years. And Lauren, I wonder if you could talk about, you know, how would you work to make sure action is taken on this issue?
Well, number one, create a plan. I cannot get behind any increased revenue until I see a plan and how it's going to be implemented. And because if you just increase revenue without a plan, that's like throwing money to the wind. And these farmers, these businesses out here can't sustain a higher tax or higher revenue cost without getting results back here to the 96th District. So I'm definitely going to work hard on both sides of the aisle, reach across, say, hey, we got to do this. I mean, we can't keep putting it off to the next session or the next generation. We got to do it now, or else we'll be back another 20 years. So definitely got to reach across the aisle and get it done.
Paul, how would you work to make sure action is taken on the issue of road funding?
Well, actually, I belong to a party that has wanted to fund roads. And the lack of the current administration, the current agenda of the sole party in power in Madison, has been to neglect the roads. They've balanced our budget, not really balanced our budget, because our budget, although it's said that we had a $500 million surplus last year, we also borrowed $2 billion. So it was a $1.5 billion shortfall of being a balanced economic budget. But I believe that the party has drug its feet and put all the money on the eastern side of the state, drug its feet on fixing the roads in our part of the state because the rural areas apparently don't matter. So I think that working within my party and bipartisanly, we will get the job done.
Paul, what are your thoughts on the state's efforts to improve broadband access in rural areas, and what more can be done to address this issue?
This is a very important issue for rural Wisconsin because I feel that in order to attract young people in the future, we need to have access to broadband all across the district. In every corner of the county, we need to have broadband because in the future, a lot of people will choose to live in our beautiful rural area and telecommute to jobs far away. I knock on doors now where people are telecommuting to San Francisco, and they've moved back here because of the high cost of living in San Francisco, and now they maybe go once every 3 months back to the company. They fly out do most of the work from home, home in the 96th district. That's the future. So how can the state help? Well, they've been giving grants, which are great, but this is imperative that we get this job done now. For my district, we have to get every corner wired up. We're gonna lose a critical mass of young people, and it's not going to be possible to get them back in the future. So I think we should institute some low interest loans to some of the providers that are willing to work with us to get this fiber laid where it needs to be laid and get the area wired so we can be a part of the new economy.
Lauren, what are your thoughts on the state's efforts to improve broadband access in rural areas, and what more can be done to address this issue?
I know right now grants are available, and we got some couple great co-ops in Inverness County have used those grants, and we've been very fortunate in Vernon County to have access to broadband. Crawford County is behind, but a lot of them are provided service with Centritel and Charter, these big companies. And I talked with them, and they said, well, even with these grants, if there's no return on investment, they don't even apply for these grants. So somehow we got to get them people on board. Giving low-interest loans to them, you know, these million-dollar companies is the answer. I think we have to try to work with the co-ops and see if they're able to come into these places, give them incentive some way that, hey, we need this. Because it is very essential for the future because everyone's on a computer. Everyone's on your phones. You know, high-speed internet is very important. You know, it's very important to the economy and to bringing people in here to the Cooley region because that's, you know, it's a great place to live. And that's part of broadband is, and roads encourage people to come here and live. So we definitely, as a state level, have to provide ways for these companies to look at it and make it a return on investment for them to actually put broadband into these homes, these businesses, so they can actually do a better job and grow a workforce that is very needed in the 96th district.
Lauren Oldenburg, Republican candidate for the 96th State Assembly seat, is here with us today for the latest in a series of debates leading up to the November election. Also joining us is his opponent, Democrat Paul Burr. Coming up, the candidates will ask each other questions as we continue the debate. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find other debates between candidates running for office in Western Wisconsin. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. Thank you. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Wisconsin's 96th Assembly seat is an open race this year after longtime Republican Representative Lee Mearson decided not to run for re-election. The district includes all or parts of Monroe, Vernon, and Crawford counties. Facing off in the November 6th election are two Viroqua area farmers, Democratic candidate Paul Burr and Republican candidate Lauren Oldenburg. Lauren, we'll start with you. K-12 education is always a top issue among voters. What are the greatest needs at schools in your district?
Some of the concerns that I've, people have addressed to me is that we need teachers. And number one, we need to give them paid and to bring in the top-notch teachers in our district. And also a second concern or issue that I've been, people have addressed me is, a good substitute teachers. They're hard to find, especially in rural districts. And so those are a couple of things that I really, if I get to Madison, I really look at to see if, hey, I can help out, because education of our kids are very important, and because that's our future, And so that's funding our schools at the public level as best that we can at the state level and give teachers every opportunity through technology, through further education to be able to teach our kids to the best level and the highest education we can provide them. So,
Paul, what are the greatest needs at schools in your district?
Well, obviously, I think we need quality teachers. That's the first thing. As a result of what has happened in the past 8 years, we're seeing a decline in the number of people that apply for teaching positions. The respect for teachers was driven to new lows by this current administration. People don't necessarily want to be teachers anymore because they feel they are not respected in the workforce. So we need to make sure that teachers know they're important and put education as a priority, especially, and the rural funding formula is a real problem for my district. The way the funding formula has been drawn up over the years, it's gradually gotten so that it puts the accent on the richer districts. It was a little difference to start with, but that's accumulated over years. We have to change that so it's fair to our rural districts. We have to get broadband to every corner so these schools can institute programs with long-distance learning. Some of these schools don't have the resources to have enough teachers because of those class sizes. The voucher system is draining our public schools. We don't have any voucher schools in our district, yet this is a policy that is going to drain our district. We have students that come here to La Crosse, and vouchers are paid out of taxpayer money. Taxpayers have to pay for private educations. I don't think we can maintain two school systems. We have the money to have fund one school system, and we must do it well.
Paul, we've seen school shootings take place across the country in the last few years. Do local school districts have adequate funding and resources to tackle these new concerns around safety?
Absolutely not. We have a referendum proposed in Viroqua that has several millions proposed just to add safety measures for the students. I think that this is a major difference between our ideas as Democrats and what is proposed on the other side. We have to do some common sense, responsible gun legislation that will limit the ability of 18-year-olds to buy assault rifles. We have to have universal background checks to make sure we keep guns out of the hands of people with mental illness and also the criminal element. But to allow, most of these shootings are by young people that have just recently graduated, and they use assault rifles with large magazines. It's irresponsible to not address this issue first.
Lauren, do local school districts have adequate funding and resources to tackle new concerns around safety?
I agree with Paul. No, they don't have enough funding. I don't think they ever will. But we definitely have to address this issue. I know the local sheriffs and police, they go to these schools and do training. I know it's a top priority in a lot of these schools that, hey, we got to address this issue. And at the state level, we have to address this issue through funding, ways about going about making these schools safer. So definitely that's a concern and should be one of the top priorities in education. So these kids can go to class not having that as a fear. Because when we went to school, that was not even a thought in our mind. And we love to bring that back to the classroom so they do not have to think about their safety. And parents dropping off these kids don't have to think about their safety because they know they're safe in these schools. So we definitely have to address at the level that at the schools, are they safe, and what's the best way of doing that? You know, I know every school's built different, you know, so every situation is going to be different, but we got to do it, work with the police force, the school boards, the administrations to make these schools safe, and that's where we got to start. At the state level, we got to fund that and make programs out there available so that these administrations at these schools can do it.
We've asked each of the candidates to prepare a question for their opponent. Lauren, we'll have you start. Please ask your question.
In prior debates, and you brought up farmland use value. So I kind of like you to clarify, and if you would look in, if you would get elected to state assembly, would you propose or make changes in the use value, and how would you do that?
To explain the farmland use value, that's a tax credit that's given to farmers that farm their land. It was given on farmland, we get a special rate. The rate is because we are farmers, it's a very reduced rate as it would be if, for instance, if you paid on a house, $100,000 worth of a house will get assessed at the mill rate going, but it's a dollar rate for the farmland that's very low. This is a necessary tax break that farmers need because there's just not the margins to to pay high taxes on land. I'm very much in favor of that. The issue I have that Lauren brings up is when investors from out of the area, out of the state, even out of this country, buy land in rural Wisconsin, driving up the prices, making it unavailable for young farmers to start, then they get the tax credit. That's the issue I have with farmland use, tax credit. It's the unnecessary tax advantage that a Chinese investor, a Wall Street investor gets to when he buys our farmland, and he doesn't care if I have good roads, my neighbors have schools to send their kids to. This is a tax loophole that we must close.
Lauren, now you have the opportunity to explain why you wanted to ask that question and your position.
My biggest concern, this use value tax credit is very important for the farm economy, and especially in the 96th district, because it's not so much all comes on to the farmers, it also comes on landowners, you know, that rent land to farmers. And so if that value, that tax value assessment goes away, all of a sudden, we would not be able to rent that land and possibly drive off some other farmers and stuff. It gets attacked every session down, hey, the ones from Milwaukee area and stuff don't want this tax value assessment. They want it gone. So if we up here open this up to, hey, we're in possibly, hey, let's look at it and make adjustment. My biggest fear is it all of a sudden disappears. And that would be detrimental to the farm economy for this district. And so I definitely would, you know, leave it as is. And I understand there's investors out there that own land in this area, in this district, that, but they also, you know, you're affecting people from out of state to have a home in the area for the summer home. Well, they bring a lot of economy in here. If they come up here and spend the summer, then go away. And this would be a part, they would get affected by this use value assessment going away. So that's my biggest concern. If we attack that, even open it up, it will be disappear on us.
Paul, did you want the opportunity to have a 1 minute follow-up?
Yes, I do. I think that as a lawmaker, it is our job to make just and good laws. And sometimes we have to adjust laws that have been made in the past to make them better. This is an unintended consequence of a good law to benefit farmers. It is not going to affect someone that has a home from another state. That home is currently not included. They have to pay the mill rate just like everybody else. So that's not an argument. There will have to be decisions on what landowners are exempt from this, but I think that's our duty as lawmakers, is to make sure that the tax system is fair, and that as a landowner, I don't want to be taxed off my land either, but I do want a situation where young people can continue to grab the American dream here in Wisconsin and farm.
Lauren, we'll offer you an additional minute if you have any follow-up.
It's not so much the homeowner will get taxed in. That homeowner might own 200-300 acres with open land that gets pulled, you know, that don't live here all the time, but here sometime. You know, they own a farm, rent it out, and they get this use value assessment also. And a lot of us have our assets, our time tied up in this land. And I feel if this disappears on us, the value will get driven down at land, and we have all our retirement tied up in that land. And it's a very big concern of mine going forward. So
you're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're featuring a debate between the candidates for Wisconsin's 96th Assembly seat, Republican Lauren Oldenburg and Democrat Paul Burr, both from the Viroqua area. Paul, we'll now have the opportunity for you to ask Lauren a question.
The Wisconsin has recently given $3.5 billion to a foreign corporation to open up a factory in southeast Wisconsin. Now, Kimberly-Clark is asking for a similar tax handout. What is your feeling on this?
I was really concerned when, you know, talking about Foxconn down there, that litigating that bill was only like 24 days. And I think that was a very short period of time that we can actually, you know, do a very serious thing. And I understand the incentive is based on what they do, provide jobs and stuff like that. But going forward, my concern is that on far as jobs availability, you know, are they going to pull jobs away from the 96th district? Will we have enough people in our district to actually, you know, fill the jobs that we needed around here? But I once told that, you know, these are great, you know, plans. If they work out well, it will help the state. I'm very skeptical on if these plans come to the to where they plan on doing, you know. That's my little, you know, that's my fear on that part. But if they do, I think it will be beneficial to the state, you know, that, hey, brings in a lot of econ, helps bring tax money into the state level, that we can bring some of that tax money over in this district. But I have not seen the plan laid out on the paper mill up there and see what it all entails. I'm not seeing, hey, you know, what's that tax incentive base, you know, to keep that company. Understand if they don't, they go out of here. I do not know that. I don't know where they're at in financial situation. So I can't really say yes or no to that up there.
Paul, now I will have you explain why you wanted to ask that question in your position.
The $3.5 billion payout to the Foxconn is money that isn't used to fix our roads. It's not used to fund our schools. And that money will be a payout. Most of that, most likely, there are no taxes that are going to be adjusted against on Foxconn. It'll be, much of that will be a cash payout. The same with Kimberly-Clark. The $200,000 a job, it's a bad precedent to set as a state. We must create an atmosphere, an environment in the state that people want to live here and companies will come. To bribe corporations to come into the state at the expense of other parts of the state is not responsible administration. So I feel that the $3.5 billion, that is going to cost us 25 years, they say it'll be a payback. That doesn't even consider opportunity costs, the opportunity costs that we could have used that money in our education system, or our building roads, or our putting in broadband to make the whole state thrive. So I think this is bad policy. I think we must run away from it in the future.
Paul, how do we attract and maintain young people and families to Wisconsin, especially in largely rural areas like your district?
Well, that's the role of government is to create this environment by building infrastructure. We have to have young families move to our area. A lot of times they visit and on vacation and as part of the tourism package. And they fall in love with the area around me, and they continue to stay. And then they try to figure out a way to start a business or get a job at one of the businesses that already exist. So we have to make sure that we create an environment that has good roads. We create an environment that has good schools. Young people move where schools are excellent. So we have to make sure that our rural schools are still top-notch. And also the broadband issue. We have to make sure that broadband is everywhere so these rural homes can still have value, because they will not have value if they don't have high-speed internet. So that's the role of government as I see it, is to create this environment, and we must create it all over the state. We want to be a part of the future. I was born in South Dakota, and now when I go back there. We moved to Wisconsin because there was an opportunity to buy land here and not there. And now when I go back, I always wonder who the lucky ones were, because the infrastructure is gone. There's no neighbors there. There's no communities. We must continue to try to keep our communities together in rural Wisconsin so people want to live here and thrive in the future.
Lauren, how do we attract and maintain young people and families in Wisconsin, especially in largely rural areas like your district?
Like we say, we got a referendum coming up in our district. And when I was sitting through that first meeting a couple months ago, and one young couple said, hey, that was a big decision for me to come to the school district is because of the school. And so we definitely have to keep, you know, those schools up to the top notch as we can as a state level, that keep them funded, keep them children accessible to further in their education through, you know, graduate program or classes at the high school level, working with the tech schools and stuff, and so that these kids can start their education, further in their education, their careers also right in high schools. I think university is a very big role in this. When I went to UWL, and I had a lot of kids from Milwaukee area that were friends of mine, said, love to come to the Cooley region. So I think we have to really advertise we have a great place to live here in the Cooley region. The scenery, the tourism, job opportunities, and that all comes down to, you know, providing them good paying jobs. And that comes down with providing these kids great education and an opportunity to have jobs in the district and furthering their careers in the district And that's our job as a state assembly, to provide these opportunities for these young people in this district to stay here.
Chronic wasting disease, or CWD, in deer have been found in Vernon and Crawford counties, and Monroe County is on the watch list. At the start of the summer, Governor Scott Walker introduced new rules to try to stop the spread of the disease. What are your thoughts on these measures, and what more can the state do, Lauren?
I think they, when that first came out, I think they were been very active. As you know, I don't know how many years ago when it started that to try to hone in, keep these chronic wasting disease in a certain area, prevent baiting, crossing over deer carcasses from county to county line. And I think that has to continue work with the game wardens out there, DNR, and also the hunters out there, you know, because they don't want this disease to continue on. So definitely any help that we can do at the state level is a good thing, because game hunting in our district brings in a lot of revenue. And that's what we got to continue it, because this tradition is passed down from generation, generation, generation. And that's a very important revenue for the DNR. It's also very important revenue for the district, brings family together, and that's what it's all about. So we definitely have to keep this disease under control and do what we can do at any expense to keep it there.
Paul, what are your thoughts on the current new measures to stop the spread of CWD, and what more can the state do?
Well, deer hunting is a great tradition at my farm. We've got a lot of deer. We're almost overrun by deer. In the evening, they come up right in our lawn now. But right now, it's deer camp at my place. We've got a couple of Minnesota residents. One is my son right now, out there hunting right now, and we're hoping to thin out the herd a little bit. I think that's what's really, in the long run, that's what's necessary, is to get the numbers down so you don't have CWD cross-contamination. I think that's the interaction between the deer is the main method of transmission. But I think we need scientists at the DNR. We've had most of the scientific community fired at the DNR, and I think we need scientists to come up with the solutions and get the data that they need from the deer that are harvested. We need to make sure we have enough surveys going on to address this situation in an intelligent way. And to do that, we need scientists at the DNR that can look at the data and figure out a path forward.
We have limited time left, so I want to offer the opportunity for you each to take an additional minute. We'll start with you, Paul. Why should the people of Western Wisconsin vote for you?
Well, because elections matter. Our votes will be different. Roads that don't get fixed, underfunded locally, and paid for by borrowed money, that's just not good enough. A $4 billion handout to a corporation owned by a foreign billionaire, that math doesn't add up for our state in the long run, and that's just not good enough. We got lip service to pre-existing conditions while turning down $1 billion in funding for our healthcare system in Wisconsin, and now suing a case that will result in the loss of healthcare for thousands of Wisconsin citizens. That's just not good enough. I will do everything I can to represent the people of Wisconsin, and I feel I have the years of experience and leadership that will give me the tools of communication that will make me an effective leader for Southwest Wisconsin.
Lauren, why should people vote for you?
I believe with my experience as a town board member, town chairman, current president of a Chaseburg Settings Co-op, past president of West Peak Creamery Board, and 14 years on there, had to leave because of term limits. With my leadership skills of keeping these co-ops local and also growing them and creating jobs at the local, being part of a team that be able to create jobs. So I believe with my leadership skills that I've created in the past 30 years, my communication skills, my availability to the district, that I can actually, you know, go down to Madison with a strong voice, common sense solutions to deal with the issues that are affecting the 96 districts, like roads, education, health care. Those are the issues that I want to go down to Madison with to help come up with common sense solutions to fix.
We've been talking with Republican Lauren Oldenburg and Democrat Paul Burr, two candidates running for Wisconsin's 96th Assembly District. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.